Welcome to the Equitable Grading Practices Podcast, powered by the Oregon Department of Education. I'm Dr. Robert Dillon, School Designer for Advanced Learning Partnerships, and as the host of this series of podcasts, I hope to bring new awareness to the efforts of schools and districts to create more equitable practices in grading. All of the educators on this podcast were participants in the Equitable Grading Learning Community, designed and led by the Oregon Department of Education. For more information about this project and its resources, stick around until the end of the podcast. Hello, and welcome to today's podcast. We are excited to talk more about equitable grading practices, and we have three people that have joined us that are on a unique journey that we haven't talked about so far, how people are coming together to do this in collaboration. So not a school, not a district, but as a collaborative. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that and really kick off with what I usually find is kind of the softball start to this is really, what does it mean for you to have more equitable approaches to grading in the work that you're doing and working together on?
Well, I'll start off with that question. I'm Josh Jordan. I'm the district high school instructional coach for Springfield School District. So I work out of the district office and support building instructional coaches. For us, you know, especially as we entered the pandemic, we started to really evaluate, our grading practices. And we were doing a little bit of that prior, you know, pre-pandemic as well. But once the Ready School Safe Learners materials came out and we started to dig into like the specific, you know, phrasing in the expectations in there, we saw some opportunities to kind of to examine what we were doing and bring some people together at the same time. So I think that's where it starts, right? Equitable grading means like bringing your stakeholders together, bringing the teachers that are teaching and have students in front of them to discuss how it is that they're grading, because then what that does is that starts that discussion about accuracy, right? Like how accurate we believe each other's grades are. And especially in high school, we're providing grades that turn into credits, that turn into a diploma. So that collaboration and that discussion about the accuracy of each other's grades starts to inform us about how we feel and how we believe what we think grades should do. And so through those conversations, course alikes and content area alike folks start to talk about like, hey, this is how I grade, this is how you grade. You know, is that in the best interest of students in terms of the accuracy for reporting a credit at the end of every single course? You know, if a grade is reported in one course one way and a grade is reported in another course, you know, the same course by another teacher, you know, that creates an inequitable environment where students are receiving information about their learning. So that's kind of where we started. You know, then we got into the heavier topics of, you know, grades being bias free, getting into the late work policies and the retakes and redos and all those other components and participation, extra credit, you know, all those things that start to get away from the standards, you know, the standards based grading that we are attempting to inform. You know, I think one of the ODE expectations was like instruction is based on grade level academic content standards, right? So if we're instructing on that, we should be assessing on that, which in terms like at the end of that is your grade, right? That's the thing that captures everything that you've learned at that grade, you know, grade level standards based instruction. So we started to examine those components and then remove those, as many of those bias measures that were being reported in grades that benefited and harmed different students, right? And then of course the last piece is, you know, like what is grade, how do grades impact students' interest in a class, right? How are they motivated or demotivated by grades at different times, right? And again, we got into a lot of, you know, beliefs and values conversation around that, right? Because we all have our own experience with grades and what in turn they made us do, right? So we tried to also think about the student voices in all those and not just take our own personal, you know, our own personal experiences with grades and those one-off stories that we share, but really look at You know, if a student isn't attending, you know, is it the motivation related to that grade? Is it, you know, could we provide some other, you know, more motivational ways to report grades that keep kids, you know, invested in going so they don't feel like that they want to, you know, bomb out of class and not come anymore. So I think that those conversations, and I go back to, you know, it's the equitable approach is the collaboration between teachers and students and your community about what grading is and how we want to report an accurate measure of their learning.
Yeah. So if you're listening, you're like, whew, that's a lot. It is a lot. That's the whole thing. Like equitable grading practices and really thinking about that is not like, hey, we're changing our late policy. It isn't like we're doing it. There really is a lot of stuff that's built up around that. And it's really impactful. And so I it was interesting for me to hear that. But if I kept boiling and boiling, Josh, I heard accuracy, accurate. There's certainly other pieces there, but like how that really rose to the top of like, we want what we do to be accurate. And I think that's something that many districts in the state, around the country can rally people around the idea of like, do we want to have inaccurate grades? No. Great. That's a starting place. It's a foothold. So that's a nice piece. You also mentioned that this in some ways is a relative of standards-based grading. Maybe someone can elaborate. Is it the same in your mind? Is it different? Someone give me a sense of how these equitable grading practices relate. Maybe they're in the same family as standards-based grading.
Yeah, I'll jump in on that one. So my name is Dustin Dawson. I work for Lane ESD as a STEM specialist, and I have the unique role in that I get to talk to 16 different districts in whatever capacity they need most. And it looks like all kinds of different things. And right now, one of the big ones is people are talking about grading. So I'm helping out people as much as I can with that. So to me, standards-based grading is really just one practice that a person can do, that a teacher or a building or a district can do to become more equitable. But it is not the solution. It's not one and the same. And in fact, I did standards-based grading for years in middle school, and I was very inequitable about it. So you can take any of these practices and you can really ruin them pretty easily. So you know, when I was doing my standards-based grading, yes, I was grading towards these particular standards, but I was still converting those grades into percentages. I was still marking down for late work and participation and citizenship and all those behavior related things. And I even used things like power law, which, you know, would take, that's another standards, but it would take the more recent test as a stronger, it would basically weight the more recent test stronger, right? But I didn't really understand how power law was calculated. Great, I'll use power law. But because I didn't know what it was doing, I couldn't make modifications based on an individual student. And so I think my big answer for what is standards-based grading, well, are they the same things? No, they're not. Equitable grading and standards-based grading are not. They are. It's merely a tool that one can use. And it's, in my opinion, probably the hardest one to do, to really implement fully. It's one of the hardest practices you can do. So if you're trying to get into equitable grading, I wouldn't start there. That would freak out a lot of teachers, personally. I would start with some of the lower hanging fruit and build your way into it.
Yeah, and I love that it's a good reminder, Dustin. You said you can do these like they're a checklist. I do this, I do this, I do this. But unless you check yourself really against whether or not it's happening equitably, it's not really a set of practices, it's a set of pursuits that you have to keep having your check against yourself. Am I really doing this? Is it fair? Is it honest? Is it for all? I think that's an important piece. So I don't want to lose that in the mix there. You know, some though will say that things like equitable grading practices are really about lowering expectations, right? You know, like, hey, you know, you're just making it easier on kids. You know, this is just another way to make sure that we get all our kids to graduate, or we have kids with A's and their grade point averages and parents leave us alone. Help us understand as an audience how this isn't just a lowering of expectations.
Yeah. Well, I was hoping that we were going to have another participant in this, Dr. Leah Dunbar. She's a colleague that I get to work with. And this particular teacher is a phenomenal human being who has lived for a long time in the ethnic studies space and has really been digging into this work and really thinking deeply. So I had a chance to talk to her and ask her some of these, her thoughts about grading. And this was one that she really kind of latched onto. And her point that really struck, well, she had two that really struck me hard, but one was that if we go into education with a mentality that we should always have some winners and some losers, and that if you, for some reason, your class has all students passing your class, oh, you must be too easy of a teacher. Like, if that's our mindset, I am terrified that we call ourselves educators. Like, my goal is always to have 100% of my students get straight A's. That's my goal. No, I've never made that goal happen. It's true. However, it shouldn't be a foregone conclusion that if every student in your class is passing, that means your class is easy. And I think it, now this is like my lens of it, which is that this is white supremacist culture at its best, I think, right here, is this notion that no matter what, we should always sort the people that we have in our lives. We should always see some as being better than others, and we should always try to diminish the value that the others bring into the classroom. And that's not what teachers, I know personally, I did never wanted to do that to any of my students. I wanted to show the value of all of them. So if, now you said that standards-based grading, is that going to be easier then? Is that the point of that? And I think it's easy for us to say that compliance and turning the work in on time and getting and showing up in an appropriate way, whatever that means in your particular classroom, because it is different in every classroom, what appropriate looks like. And if that's a part of the grade, what is that telling us about that grade? So if standard, I think for me, equitable grading is trying to separate these two things, behaviors and your academic ability and knowledge. Like, we're trying to pull those two apart. Sure, showing up on time to class and turning your work in on time, that's important job skill stuff, no question about it. And it should be reported somewhere, but should it be reported as a part of the grade? And so that's the part that I'm going to say we have to be careful of. And I will say that it's harder for many of our students to have their grades based solely on their assessments, whatever that might look like. Because I've certainly had conversations with students, I've talked to other colleagues where the students will say, don't change your grading policy because I know how to play this game. I know that if I do all my work and just turn it in at this level, then I'm gonna buffer my grades. So in some ways, equitable grading is actually harder in some ways. It might be easier for certain students, absolutely, right? It will be easier for those students who memorize things really well and short-term memory recall is really good. But if that's how we're testing, then maybe that's problematic in itself. But yeah,
that's funny. Yeah, digressing into the other podcast we could have all about those those pieces of the puzzle. But no, I do think you're right. I had someone a long time ago say, you know what, there are people that are A students and F people, which isn't a really nice way of saying it. And I want to know accurately what they are. I don't want that all to be mushed together. That doesn't make a C anything, is what he said. And so the idea that equitable grading practices can keep those indicators clean and accurate, I think that's a good piece of the puzzle there. So let's jump. You guys have a unique perspective. And I know that I want to touch on this idea that the ESD as an organization playing a role, it gives you a line of sight into kind of a variety of districts. You know, what's that look like in all those districts, right? Like, what's it look like to be at the very beginning? What's it like to be at the end? Have some people been doing it for 10 years and 10 days? what's that big spectrum of where people are on this?
Yeah, so in our, and I can only speak to our ESD, but in Lane County, we have people all over the map. And there certainly were districts like Springfield, that Josh is a member of, that have been doing the work prior to the pandemic. But there's no question that the pandemic definitely made people start thinking way more about grades and grading and what does that mean and what's the purpose of school and all those big, big questions. And so, you know, I get called and I will talk to districts and they'll be just at the beginning stages of it where they are literally don't even know what it means. So like, I keep hearing this word equitable grading. What are they talking about? What grading practices are we really talking about? And then there are other districts or other individuals and teachers who say, you know, oh yeah, I've been doing equitable grading for the last 15 years. And then you start looking at what they're doing and it's like, okay, so you got some standards-based grading. That's great. Awesome. And, you allow for late work to be turned in, but you're still penalizing students in all these different ways that don't have to do with the academic knowledge. So, the one thing I will say about the spectrum that is consistent among all the districts is that there is a great deal of fear when people start talking about grading. There's a great deal of fear around workload issues, which is completely legitimate. I get that 100%. And the thing I keep trying to tell people is that, you know, there are practices that reduce your workload, honestly, like your grading workload. And then it might actually just make it feel like grading is worthwhile and not just a nail going in through your temple feel sometimes. I don't know if that's how it was for me at least. So that fear level is there. And then there's also that, I think with all equity work, there's always that fear of like, hang on a second. You mean to tell me that for the last 25 years, I've been doing this wrong. I've been hurting students. And that's real. I mean, I had a great deal of shame personally when I first started reading the books. I'm like, oh boy. I know I was trying my best and I didn't know better and that's great and all, but ooh, what kind of harm did I do to those individuals? So those two big things of fear are what I am trying to deal with the most. I think that's my biggest goal.
Yeah. And I want to jump out of order here, but thinking a little bit, you know, I'm really been impressed by two things. I want to, I'm going to preview and let Josh know I'm coming to him in a moment. You talked about getting your community involved. So I want you to go into that here in a moment, but I've been impressed by the work where you're bringing the teacher union together around this. And so I want to touch on what that's felt like as being a partner in this work. And so, part of that was probably out of the fear of that piece and the change and the harm and all those pieces and making sure that people felt like they could enter into that space and feel protected in some ways and supported. So can you guys talk about how that came to be in bringing everyone to the table?
Yeah, I'll speak to that. This is Sabrina Gordon. I'm the president of Eugene Education Association, representing all the licensed educators in a couple of different school districts in the Eugene area. And you know, this topic, as Dustin spoke to, the idea of equitable grading in our area really started to come to the forefront during the pandemic when teachers were really struggling to reach kids, keep kids engaged in school, and you know, and just want to do whatever we can to help keep kids motivated and focused on learning as the goal and not being punished by grades. And so it really has become a conversation. And we just, you know, knowing that we had a number of educators in our area who were interested in the topic, and starting to hear from our school district that perhaps some changes to grading practices were going to be imposed. And you know, the union radar kind of goes up. Like anytime you try to impose something upon educators, it's not really the best way to kick that off. And it's more powerful if it comes from educators and comes from that core of, as a professional educator, here's what I see my students need and what I want to do for them. And so as the union, we just started looking at how can we create space for educators to learn about this topic and this idea and to teach each other and to lead. And in order to do that, we reached out, we've had conversations with district admin, and they agreed to partner with us in this work. And then we reached out to the ESD to help facilitate the work. And it really becomes more powerful when it is that true collaboration. It's coming from something that educators see the need in students. They have that buy-in and they want to do it. And then using our union space to create that opportunity for people to really work on it and make it something that people will buy into and make lasting change.
Yeah, it's unique. I mean, I get to hear these stories from around the country and in the state, and it really is a powerful model. And the other model that I'm hearing is, how do we bring students into that conversation? What do they want in their equity, in their grading practices? And so that co-creation model goes a long way in what that looks like. And then also how you bring the community in so they get the right messaging. So Josh, talk a little bit about maybe what you've done, either bringing the community in or how are you messaging out to the community about this work?
Well, you know, like I said, we started by making sure that our teachers were involved early in the process, creating teams that represented a wide range of content areas, experience levels, and different backgrounds, right? So beginning from there, and then also bringing in student voices whenever possible, right? Like doing empathy interviews as frequently as we can to find out, you know, how students are receiving this on the other end, and what is their impression? How do they understand it as well? Because in the end, those are the individuals that this is impacting. So we engage them as often as we can, and then getting messaging out to our families about how grades, clearly outlining how grades will be recorded, that it will accurately measure their child's learning in a class, that it will be based upon standards that have been set by ODE and that students are instructed around. So just doing that and doing it frequently, right? Like never assuming that everybody has all the information that they need to fully understand it, revisiting things as often as possible. And then coming back to our teachers and talking about, you know, what is working. I think Dustin said something earlier about, you know, about kind of this work that, you know, all grading can be done inequitably. It doesn't matter any of these practices that you choose. And that's really in the end, you know, we're not trying to find a magic pill here that's going to solve all of the everything going on in education. And none of these practices are going to do that. You know, when you open up a more flexible late work policy, what ends up happening is there is a valley that happens in terms of work completion. And then you work with your students and your families to understand the connection between the formative assessments that they're doing in the practice and how it connects to the summative results at the end of that, right? And then rather than it being about this extrinsic drive to capture this grade, right? Like that we have created so many, this system of students that are so centered focus on a letter at the end of their 18 weeks or at the end of their high school career, that we've lost that intrinsic motivation, right? And you know, we're talking a little bit about like what are the, you know, some of the practices that are emerging around to support teaching and learning. And it really is around that motivation, right? Like where do teachers and students see that this has a purpose, right? How do teachers see a purpose in this work around grading for equity? And do they know what a final product looks like, right? Like, do they have an idea of what, like along the way, if there's some ups and downs, do they have an opportunity to receive some feedback and understanding of how it's impacting their students and how it's impacting the system? But then also building in some choice, right? We can't mandate a wide, you know, in a district, you must grade in this manner and only in this manner, because we know there's so many variations in content area and expertise, and all those things need to come into play. So we do need to build in some choice and voice in what people are creating for their classes, but just kind of like help narrow the boundaries. So Because when we talk about engaging our community, we need it to be understandable by our community. And the more we can kind of narrow that, rather than it being, you know, the wild west of grading that it has been now, you know, my high school experience was not that long ago. And, you know, thinking about, you know, one class, you know, you could turn in cookies for extra credit and, you know, raise your grade, you know, where another class, you had to write a 10-page paper, you know, for your final, right? I mean, like, that is such a massive range of differences in grading, that the autonomy can just be narrowed in a little bit, and it being focused around what is best for students and what isn't going to continue that extrinsic motivation and drive just for that final letter grade, with like skipping over all the learning in between.
Yeah. In most places. Oh yeah.
Add a little piece to that.
Sure.
I just was listening to Josh talk about the importance of setting parameters and still allowing for choice and voice, you know, in educators choosing what practices they're going to use for grading. And it made me think of another important piece where the union plays into this. And that is working with a district to set up a system that encourages these practices for teachers, that supports it. And a specific example is providing enough time, giving teachers enough time to give meaningful feedback to students, to take on some of these grading practices. And a great example of this is something that in Eugene, we were able to negotiate in our bargaining this year. We collectively agreed in our contract to protect the weeks of progress report and final grades from meetings. So there's a moratorium on other professional meetings cannot happen during these weeks. And we did that to protect teachers' time so that they can focus on these practices of allowing late work, you know, having more time to check in and have one-on-one meetups with students and giving students a chance to redo and try again, and all of those things. So it's important to set the parameters, allow for some choice, and create the structure within a schedule that supports the work.
Yeah, I don't want to lose that. I mean, that in and of itself could be a catalyst that would be like, okay, I'm willing to try this if I'm going to get some extra time, say the last week of the quarter or wherever it is, right? Like if you guys did your parameters, but like if folks felt like, okay, they're given a little to get a little to get this right. And the idea that it isn't standardization, it's guardrails, it's best practices, but it's not everyone has to have the exact policy, exact thing down to the number. And I've been in places where they did that and it doesn't work. It doesn't work when you do that. I know you guys have been using a lot of different resources to kind of get best practices out there, or to get people thinking. What have been some of the major big resources related to equitable grading practices that have resonated?
Yeah, well, Joe Feldman's work, Grading for Equity, has definitely been, I think, the number one resource utilized. That's in Eugene School District. We are using that as our book study reference point. And I, you know, I could just hear in the way Josh was basically summarizing the book in about 5 minutes, which was incredible. I can't believe you could do all that, but yeah, there's a lot in there. And so that's definitely number one. I like two things about Feldman's work. One is that he does have these pillars that Josh referenced, you know, the being bias resistant as much as possible. It's never possible to be totally proof, but as much as possible, that accuracy that you mentioned, and then motivational. And it's the motivational one that actually is really got me going, because it's all about how do I motivate the students to engage in the learning process. But so I think his is number one. But the other thing I really liked that he did was he was very explicit about the practices. A lot of people talk about the theory stuff, but never really digging into what do I do as a teacher. And so when I first picked up his book, I went straight to part three, which is where all the practices are. And I read all those first. And he's like, I was thinking, okay, as a teacher, yeah, I could do that. I could do that. I could do that. I do that, 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 that. Oh, I didn't do those four things. Okay. Those look really hard. Maybe not. So, but that's, I really like how he was pretty practical about it. And he also had some of the rebuttals to the common pushbacks. And that was really helpful for me, especially in my position now, when people start asking me questions like, you know, isn't it easier if you do equitable grading? So then he gives me some language to work with. The other person that I really have enjoyed listening to is, and why am I blanking on his name right now? Super dynamic guy. Oh gosh.
Romali?
Romali. Yes. Rick Romali. If you just Google his name and start watching some of his YouTube videos, it's a good time. He's just a really dynamic, interesting dude to listen to. Some of the videos look like they're shot in like the 20-aughts or even maybe in the 80s. I don't know. Looks like it was forever ago, but that actually proves, I think he has been doing this work since the 80s or something like that. And so he has really steeped himself in that work. And so I just enjoy doing that during my morning stretch or just listening to him talk. Not psyched that the two people that I go to are old white men, to be very honest with you. I really would love to hear some more voices from others. So if anybody has any suggestions about folks that are doing this work that don't look like me, that'd be great.
Yeah, and there's so much overlap, right? Like, I mean, when you go to Zaretta Hammond's book and you're reading about the culturally responsive teaching in the brain, you're seeing that overlap of like, oh, these practices are really, really centering on privileged individuals, right? And we're continuing to perpetuate that system, right? I mean, I just went through Elena Aguilar's Coaching for Equity Masterclass. And as you're like, every time we go through a scenario where we're talking about, you know, beliefs and values, there's so much tradition in these grades that have continued to perpetuate those individuals in power, right? And that have privilege to continue to rise to the top, despite, you know, despite not maybe earning that privilege, right, to be there, because of, you know, things like extra credit and participation and late work and all these behavior-based components, right? So I think that there is some, maybe there's not a specific text, you know, by an author that we can reference, but all of those other components are incredibly important. The conversations about equity, the conversations about brain research, and how far we've come over the past 20 years and just understanding, you know, motivation of humans, right? I mean, you know, 22 years ago, when I started teaching, I knew nothing about motivation and the research behind it. Now we really understand kind of what is driving the 2.0 human, you know, to quote Daniel Pink, right? Like, we are not an industrial revolution, you know, cogs in a wheel anymore. We have so many more, so much more to us that motivates us beyond just kind of that, like, get in line and work and then retire.
It really does all nest together if you start to draw the lines across. And I think that's what's powerful for me, because I was talking about standards-based grading 20 years ago, but I wasn't talking about it with the equity lens, and I wasn't talking about it with the brain research, and I wasn't talking about it as it related to experiential learning or whatever it is, right? Like, but I think we are starting to nest these things together in a pretty important way. What final thoughts? Maybe we'll just go around the horn. Final thoughts from everyone. One more time. Dustin, why don't you start us off?
Okay. Well, I think one piece, and you mentioned it at the beginning somewhere in there, but that there is so much knowledge. So we talk about resources, actually. The students and faculty in your building are immensely valuable resources if you choose to tap into them and actually listen to them. And so that, like Josh, you're talking about those other books that aren't really directly related to this. I think about Street Data, right? That book is such a powerful book at looking at, are you actually listening to your students and really trying to do something different about it and your teachers? So I think that is a real important frame for us to keep remembering that students have opinions and they do actually care. I know it's super easy as a teacher to think, XYZ student, my F students don't care about school, right? They just they don't care about it, about learning. And I don't believe that's true for any student. I think everybody cares. It's just once you get to that point, that red zone of the zone of proximal development, you've been living in the red zone for so long, you just give up. It's just not even worth the effort anymore.
And if you're in the grading churn, right? If you're in the grading system, mm-hmm. where things have just piled up on top of you, it's hard to dig your way out of that. And so we've created systems that oppress, right? Like that's what it is. Like the grading systems at some point in time, once you're in the churn, it is hard to get out. And the last thing we want to do is have kids learn less or less amounts of time, and bad grading practices lead to less learning. And you're right. When you go back to the motivation piece you were talking about, Dustin, that's the piece that gets me as well. Like we want kids to learn longer. We want the B kids to be pushing, learning longer. We want the kids that feel like they're just not doing well to still think they have a chance. And so that's always been my big motivation as well. Other final thoughts from Sabrina or Josh?
Yeah, I listen to this conversation and listen to teachers digging into this, and often just think about my own kids. I have one who has just started college. I have a current high school student, and you know, just in conversations with my own kids and hearing their experiences having gone through this pandemic and coming out of it now, and just about how difficult it is to be motivated and how buried they start to feel when grades aren't looking so good. And you know, we can learn a lot from listening to our students. They are telling us what they need. And it's really important that we listen. Just last night, we had a student in one of the Eugene school districts came to a school board meeting and spoke to the school board about grades and grading practices and how they need to change, and how there's this opportunity right now as we come out of a pandemic to not go back to the way things were, because it wasn't working for every kid, that we have this opportunity to talk to each other, listen to each other, and build this public education system into something that we all want it to be, something better for students.
Wow, that's awesome. Josh, final words.
Well, I heard it expressed in both of the wrap up there, but you know, the two of the most impactful things that can improve student learning is around, number one, collective teacher efficacy. So we have to all believe that if we come together, you know, students spend 6/7 of their day, you know, at a typical high school with a teacher, right? So we have to believe when we come together and we look at a problem and we dig into it, that is part of education, right? And I think Sabrina said something about giving time and learning for teachers to be able to dig in together on problems are how we're gonna further learning and student outcomes. And then that grades are that in the end, grades communicate the high expectations and belief that we have in our students, right? So between collective teacher efficacy and communicating high expectations to our students every single day in the systems, not just saying, I believe you can do this, but like having a system that shows that you believe that they can achieve, will change how students behave and how they're motivated and how they achieve in every single one of our courses.
Well, thanks to everyone for a great conversation, and continue the great work that's happening there, because it's worth it for all of our kids. Thanks for joining us. For more information about equitable grading practices and the resources and learning available from the Oregon Department of Education, check out the show notes. Until next time, think big and stay intentional about all that you do for students.